today is United States against Henderson. Ms. Hoffman.
May it please the court, my name and counsel. My name is Gail Hoffman. I represent the United States of America in this case. On December 19, 2000, Congress enacted the DNA Analysis Backlog and Elimination Act. The purpose of that act was to collect DNA from defendants convicted of certain qualifying offenses. The sole question before this court today is whether bank larceny under Title 18 United States Code Section 2113 sub B is in fact a qualifying offense that fits under the DNA Recovery Act. It is the government's position that it is for the following reasons.
This is a matter of curiosity. What do you want with the DNA stuff?
Well, the DNA, the act was passed to bring the federal government in line with the state. The state has been collecting DNA from certain offenders for a long time. And that DNA then is put into
a bank
in Dakota, and then it's used to match DNA from crime scenes with individuals who've committed, with victims of crime where there's DNA left, and there are a whole host of legitimate law enforcement reasons.
Well, there's a whole host of ways you can get the DNA material too, isn't there? I mean, DNA material isn't limited to, say, blood withdrawals or anything. As I recall, that you can get it by scraping the skin.
That's correct.
I assume you could get it by analyzing the man's urine, which he probably has to give samples of regularly since he's on supervised release.
Sure, I don't know whether or not you can obtain it from urine. I suspect that you can. I'm not a scientist, so I can't speak with any specificity to that. But scientific minds greater than mine, much greater than mine, have found that the blood draw is the most accurate way to obtain the number.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's probably the cheapest to analyze.
That could very well be.
To figure out what is his contribution and what has just passed through him.
And to jump ahead on that particular issue, the fact that it is a blood draw is not an unsettled constitutional question that's been well resolved by the...
Don't ever convince me.
Okay. Thank you.
Except that the Ninth Circuit is to the contrary.
Well, it is in the Kincaid case. It is not in the Rise case. The Ninth Circuit has two opinions that are conflicting with one another. That's the only circuit where that's the case. And in fact, the government has...
Let me set your mind at rest. You do not have to convince Judge Easterbrook that the Ninth Circuit occasionally errs.
All right, well, but it is, going back to the key question here, I think that on the plain, it is the government's position that on the plain language of the statute, it's clear that bank larceny is included.
Well, that's an overstatement. It's not quite clear that bank larceny is included.
Certainly not clear.
Well, if it's not clear and if it is ambiguous, then that brings us to Chevron. If there are two, under Chevron,
What in your view is the scope of the Attorney General's authority? Could he require DNA to be collected for, say, a mail fraud under...
No, he cannot. He cannot. I believe that the legislative history is clear on that. He can only include the enumerated...
Let's first talk about the statute. Legislative history may or may not be useful to disambiguate the statute, but what does the statute say?
What's
the scope of the Attorney General's authority?
The Congress provided that this section shall be carried out under regulations prescribed by the Attorney General. Title 42, United States Code, Section 14135A(1). That's exactly what the statute is.
What's the scope of his authority as you read it? The critical language is actually as determined by the Attorney General. And that's already problematic because it's in the passive, and I have no idea what the construction means. How does the Department of Justice read that language?
Congress included all of 2113.
No. I'm not asking about 2113. I'm asking about the scope of the Attorney General's discretion. One possibility is the Attorney General has the discretion, has to include within his regulations everything listed here, and then might include other things not listed here. One would think that that would be a Chevron delegation. The other possible reading is that the only thing the Attorney General can do is just parrot the statute. Then there's no Chevron delegation. And your first answer, no, the Attorney General could not include mail fraud, sounds like you're saying the Attorney General is supposed to just parrot the statute. And if that's the Attorney General's job, I don't see any Chevron, any delegation within the scope of Chevron. If it's not the Attorney General's job, if the Attorney General has some latitude to add things to the statute, then I'm wondering what the where one finds the grant of authority in this statute.
Your Honor, I am aware of your dissent in Republican Title Company and your concerns about Chevron, and I don't know if that's the subject matter that you're alluding to.
I'm not asking about the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. I'm asking about the meaning of this statute.
In this particular, under this particular statute, Congress delegated the authority to the Attorney General.
The authority to do what is the question?
Your Honor, I would like to answer your question. I see that I am into my rebuttal
yes,
time.
Yes, but I would like you to answer my question.
I believe that it is the Attorney General must look at the statute, the intent of Congress, and based on the intent of Congress, then, as prescribed by the statute, set out in regulation what he or she believes should be included. And in this particular case, based on...
And answer my question. Right. It's a fundamental question. Can the Attorney General add to the list or not? And if you think the Attorney General can add to the list, I'm asking you to give me a reason why.
The Attorney General cannot add outside the scope of
right.
what Congress has set out.
If the Attorney General can't add to the list, then what role do the Attorney General's regulations play? If they just mimic or parrot the statute, how has there been a delegation for purposes of Chevron?
Well, in this particular case, because there seems to be some ambiguity on the plain language of the statute, whether or not bank larceny is included or not, because of that ambiguity, the Attorney General has the authority to look at the statute, to look at the intent of Congress, and to set out in a regulation, in this case 28 CFR section 28.2 sub A, what it believes should be included, what he believes should be included.
Are there any constitutional limits? I realize that we don't have a constitutional issue here that we're going to be dealing with, but are there any limits, or could the government, could Congress pass a law that said every felon convicted in federal court must give a DNA, a blood sample for DNA purposes to be stored in the database?
If Congress, if Congress passed that law, I imagine there would be constitutional challenges to it of the same nature that have occurred here. But many of the states, I think 24 states, do require all convicted felons to provide DNA, and those statutes have been upheld in state court. So I imagine that if Congress passes such legislation that absent any work in the courts, that it would be constitutional.
I think that probably is true. So if Congress could make every felon deposit or give a DNA, a blood sample for DNA purposes, Congress here has obviously decided that some offenses just don't quite measure up here. They're not the kind that a DNA sample would taken from an offender would be appropriate. You agree that Congress has drawn a line?
I absolutely agree.
Okay, so why is this $13,000 bank larceny defendant wouldn't be on the safe side of the line that Congress has drawn?
Because it's the Department of Justice's reading of the statute. That Congress, and actually mine too, that Congress has included bank larceny, that Congress took the global heading of Chapter 103, robbery and burglary, included in the language and specifically cited as included in Sections 211 through 2114, excluding 215, moving on to several others. So Congress did decide that this is a covered statute. And for that reason, it could be, I think, that one of the reasons is what you have in robberies and burglaries. Sometimes you have those type of cases negotiated to something that's not quite as, that's a lesser crime. In the study in Virginia that was before Congress, that study indicated that 40% of violent offenders were convicted of lesser crimes before committing the violent act of rape or a similar violent act. So I think
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much,
Thank you.
Ms. Joseph.
May it please the court, my name is Nancy Joseph and I represent Michael Henderson. I think this is one of the cases where the district court here is right and should be affirmed, and the district court.
I almost said one of the few cases, but
I was referring back to the earlier comment made by the court that sometimes the district court is right and sometimes the district court is right for the right reason, and I think this is one of the cases where the district court is right for the right reason, and the reason being is the text of the statute. In the text of the statute, Congress has spoken. Congress could have written the statute to require...
Everybody thinks the statute is clear. You just don't agree on what it means. This is always a bad sign.
I think, Your Honor, that the statute is not ambiguous, even though the...
Why is it not ambiguous? Let me give you two readings. Here's what bugs me about the case. There are two, it seems to me, fundamental ways to read that statute. One is to say... You have to look for an offense included among sections 2111 to 2114 that is robbery or burglary. That's the way the district court read it. That's the way you read it. The other way to read this statute is to say, so far as we here in Congress are concerned, the offenses listed in those statutes are robbery or burglary.
Your Honor, I believe that the first reading, the reading that the district court finds is correct and is not ambiguous because it takes into account the entire sentence. That is, the sentence is offenses involving robbery or burglary in parentheses as described in the section numbered there. To read it the second way, Your Honor, would leave out the offense involving robbery or burglary. So it would render those words meaningless, superfluous, and would ignore them, basically. And in interpreting statutes, we are to give meaning to every word that Congress has used and assume that Congress used them purposefully. And that is why I believe that that reading is the correct reading, and it's not ambiguous. A statute is not ambiguous because two opposing sides propose different reading of the statute. I think the statute is only ambiguous if applying the rules of statutory construction that you cannot discern the meaning. Here, applying the rule of statutory construction, meaning giving every word in the sentence meaning, the meaning of the statute is clear. Congress could have left the words offense involving robbery or burglary out, but chose not to. Congress could have left the words in parentheses as described in the specific offense, but chose not to. The words are there for a reason, and that is to limit the offenses, not to include bank larceny, to limit and specify which offenses that are to be used. The word.
Why, in your view, did the statute name the whole section rather than the particular subsections? Your view suggests that Congress made some error. What it should have done was to say sections 2111, 2112, 2113A and D, and 2114. But it referred to all of 2113 because it's in that 1 through 11 through 14.
That is correct, Your Honor. Congress could have specified, for example, 2113A, but by using the word...
And D. You agree that D is also robbery or burglary.
Yes. But by using the words involving robbery or burglary, Congress has accomplished the same thing by limiting it to offense that involves robbery or burglary.
Yeah, the problem is that it doesn't really, a word like involving really is a problem. How, on your view, would one treat the person who receives the proceeds of the bank robbery? I think that's 2113C. It's involving the person who receives the proceeds didn't commit the bank robbery, but it's an offense involving robbery. And the Supreme Court held in Gaddis that it merges into a robbery conviction. It's close enough. So how does one treat receipt of the proceeds?
I would think that receiving the proceeds under 21113C would be something different than robbery or burglary. I would have to compare the elements, Your Honor, of robbery.
It's not robbery, but it involves robbery.
It is not robbery, maybe come close to involving robbery, but even that section is very different, Your Honor, than the bank larceny that is at issue here, where it is both bank larceny compared to robbery is both factually different and the elements are different. Robbery has the element of force and generally involves potential of use of force, whereas bank larceny is a theft. Very typical of the kind that we saw in this case, a person working at a bank pocketing some money from the bank. So I think it's bank larceny is very distinguishable factually and legally from robbery or burglary that is delineated in the statute. I don't have a lot of time left, but I want to get to the question of the role of the Attorney General here, because the government talked about it a little bit and the court seemed interested in it. It is our view, Your Honor, that the text of the statute has this specific offenses, and the Attorney General does not have the authority
You told us that an important principle of statutory interpretation is to make every word have some meaning, and the actual language is as determined by the Attorney General. And in your view, the word determined doesn't mean anything, because all the Attorney General can do is parrot back Congress's language. Determined sounds like it's, you know, asking the Attorney General to make a determination. Now, in your view, the Attorney General can't make any determinations. He can just, you know, put the statutory language into the regulations.
The Attorney General can make determinations, but they cannot be contrary to what Congress has specified in the statute.
But as I understand your argument, anything other than just repeating the language of the statute verbatim would be contrary to what Congress has provided.
I want to answer it correctly, Your Honor. I think the statute has listed qualifying offenses, and here the statute has not listed bank larceny, so the Attorney General does not have the authority to add offenses.
So on your
otherwise.
View, the Attorney General has no authority whatsoever. He can't subtract from the statute. He can't add from the statute. He can't interpret the statute. You say that's reserved to the courts. And therefore, despite the fact that this is actually written down in the statute, it's completely empty. It serves no function whatsoever. And that's incompatible with your principle that all the words of the statute ought to be given some meaning, is it not?
I think if I took that position, I think, yes, it would be incompatible. But I could also answer that question. I don't want to, if we had to go outside of the text itself, Your Honor, looking at the House report where Congress tells the Attorney General that because of the way the statute is written, there are some offenses that are described by words, and there's offenses that are described by words and section number. And the House report says Attorney General may not add to the offenses described by words. And this is an example where robbery is described by word and by section number. And in that instance, Attorney General may not go and
He can't subtract what's left. Maybe he's been authorized to resolve ambiguities.
And that would take us back to the text of the statute, Your Honor, and it's our position that it is not ambiguous because when we read the sentence as a whole, offense involving robbery or burglary as described, then bank larceny is excluded from that. And for those reasons, Your Honor, we ask that you affirm the district court's decision because the district court relied on the text of the statute and the principles of statutory construction.
Thank you very much. Now your time has expired, counsel. We'll hear finally this morning in the case of Touch of